We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. My usual enthusiasm on a Monday is darkened by the baseball results of a Sunday, David. There's no way around it.
Good morning, Mully. It was a terrible sports weekend baseball-wise in Chicago. Yeah, so I understand why you might feel a little bit grumpy this morning. I get it, because the White Sox blow a lead. The Cubs can't hit. Even the Bulls have to rub it in on Sunday night. If your day wasn't bad enough, you know what? It'll get worse, because we're going to lose to the worst team in the NBA. Yeah, that was rough yesterday.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that Bulls loss was the cherry on top. And you know, the damnedest thing about it is they were never – really in that game. They were like 10 points down in that game the whole game, and you kept thinking, well, surely they're not going to lose here. Surely they can't lose this game. Not after the horrible loss that they suffered in Atlanta, where they just stopped playing for some reason at the end of a game they were controlling. So you figured, okay, Minnesota's pulling a Bulls. They're going to stay with you for a while, and then the Bulls take over, and it never happened. So it was a tough one.
It was like, you know, you come off the White Sox big victory we talked about on Friday morning. You have, you know, Yermin is the surprise of baseball, Lance Lynn, the workhorse. You come in Friday morning, you're feeling pretty good about things. You go home, you watch the Bulls, and here's Zach scores 39 points in the first half against the Hawks. And you're thinking, hey, this is pretty cool. Wow, you know, on top of everything else going on, we'll worry about the Cubs later. They'll eventually score some runs. And then the Bulls blow it. Then you get into Saturday and you think, okay, well, all right, well, the Sox get rained out. The Cubs can't really score a run. I thought we agreed they were going to get 11 hits per game in Pittsburgh. They don't do that. And then you wake up yesterday morning full of hope that is just ruined. Ruined.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know where we should start the conversation. Do we talk about the wretchedness of the Cubs hitting or the horror of the White Sox bullpen? It seems like either topic could satisfy either side of town.
Well, when we start taking phone calls, we should ask people which was the biggest source of frustration from Chicago baseball's perspective over the weekend. The White Sox bullpen, which continues to be a mystery, because it was supposed to be the best. They told us it was going to be the best, and here they blow another lead. Or the Cubs hitting, because they are the worst in baseball average-wise. Now they're hitting a robust 167. They can't even get – if they got to the Mendoza line, they would have to go on a surge like they haven't experienced yet this season. So White Sox bullpen or Cubs hitting, which is more frustrating? It's hard to say.
It really is hard to say, and it's really equally frustrating, I suppose, depending on what side of town you're on. The Cubs drop a series to the Pirates. They lost yesterday 7-1. Trevor Williams – hit hard on his return to Pittsburgh, and he spent the first five seasons of his career there. His dad is in the stands. It's a wonderful story, unless his son isn't pitching well, and then we don't care about the story. That's just life.
Well, the Cubs did treat him to some Little League baseball for the Little League father in the stands watching this. Trevor Williams. Did not have it. It was, you don't know what role nerves or just he's too amped up pitching against his former teammates. Whatever it was, he didn't have it. And from one game to the next, it was a different pitcher.
And that followed, I mean, so that's Sunday. Saturday night, if you wasted your life watching it, the Cubs lost 8-2 with the Pirates scoring 7 times in the second inning, and Zach Davies,
ouch,
run out of that start in the second inning. He gave up 7 runs in 1 2/3 innings. That's going to leave a mark. That's
yeah.
going to be hard to make your ERA look good when something like that happens. And goodness gracious, that was just that's a terrible loss. And here's some terrible news. The Pirates are 3-6 on the season, and the 3 wins are all against the Cubs.
That's a bit embarrassing.
Especially
yeah.
since we consider them like a 4A team, right?
Well, they are a 4A team, Mully. I mean, you see the okay. lineup they tried out there, and the Cubs now have lost 3 times to that 4A team. And the Zach Davies start was disappointing, or as a 219 texter already weighs in, hey, David, who won the Darvish trade now? So I guess that's one way to look at it.
Wow. Yeah. So, well, we got to wait till those lottery tickets come get scratched off.
Yeah.
From the Rick Meyer's dad, please don't talk to the media school of journalism, Mike Bryant was in the Sun-Times on Saturday. I don't know why. I don't know why this kind of frustrates me a little bit. I just worry when your dad's talking about you and you're like a grown-up. I don't know. I Mike Bryant said a lot of different things, and it was mostly positive, and talked about how much his kids, you know, gives 100% all the time, never slacks off. But he also said he's been snake bitten since May of 18.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah,
Dad,
I saw
Dad,
that.
Don't help me. Don't say anything, Dad, please.
You know, Richard Williams is, I think, going to be on the score later this afternoon, I believe, and we hear from the parents of these players, and it is a bit unusual. Mike Bryant has been part of the mix for a long time with Chris. I wonder how much his role has changed over time. He, you know, at one point he was his personal hitting instructor. You don't know how that has happened. I think he alluded to during the story, the pandemic changed some of the dynamics, certainly. But that was an interesting interview, only because at this point in time, you wonder about what was bothering him. Mike Bryant is a pretty active participant in Chris's career, and it sounds like he's a little frustrated as well with the way things are being perceived and the way things are going.
But it's like, you know, he's Chris and I, and he and I, and I don't know, David. I would rather hear from the player. I don't want to be like, I am a parent and I try to stay out of my kids' business, and it's an impossible thing to do because you have to be heavily involved in everything going on with your children, and it's kind of a lifetime role. But I think at some point, you know, you need to like not show up at work. I wouldn't want my dad calling Mitch and telling him that, you know, Mully doesn't feel good today. Even though I've never called him Mully, I'm going to do it for the purpose of this conversation. And my father, I've lost my father, and I wish he was around to butt into my life, but he really never did.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think there's a fine line between, showing an interest and maybe becoming too big of a part of the story. And Mike Bryant is a guy that has walked that line and been pretty much part of the proceedings for a long time now. It's like you didn't have to explain to somebody who Mike Bryant is, because they already know, and that says a lot right there.
All right, so the White Sox, they bang the Saturday game, right? White Sox off Friday. They bang the Saturday game for rain. The rainout was announced at like 9 in the morning, which was really curious. And then on Sunday, they find a way to lose to a left-handed starter, something that hasn't happened. They were going to tie the record, and instead they gave up a run in the eighth inning, a run in the ninth inning, and a run in the 10th inning and lost 4-3. That's just the facts. So it's Bummer, Hendricks, and Crochet each give up a run in the final three innings of the ball game, including extra innings. And here you have the White Sox finding a way to lose when on the verge of winning a game.
Well, the gut punch was the Hendricks homer, because you had just watched Adam Eaton round the bases triumphantly after, you know, hitting the big home run, the pinch hit homer. And you thought, okay, this is the way you're going to finish this series on a high note. You're going to beat the Royals and you're going to have your closer finish things off after a clutch home run, keep the momentum going. And he gives up a home run, and you're like, okay, what just happened here? And then you get into extra innings and that nonsense with the runner on second. We'll get to that later. But, yeah, that was deflating, to say the least, because, once again, guys you have, you know, kind of you want to trust, and you should trust, and eventually you will trust these bullpen relievers. They're letting you down time and again.
The White Sox have Carlos Rodon on the bump. He's their stopper. And nah, I'm just exaggerating. But he throws tonight, and the Sox host the Indians, who are in first place. The Sox, by the way, 4-5 right now.
Yeah, Carlos Rodon gets a chance to turn things around. Can we go back to that extra inning game, though, for a second and,
sure.
and ask? And I guess we'll
yesterday?
Continue to
yeah.
to my, yeah, yesterday. Yeah, the loss. The one that Liam Hendricks gave up the home run. And then Nick Williams was at the plate. And Yasmani Grandal was available, right?
Yep,
I mean, I didn't miss something there. He wasn't, like, injured. He wasn't – okay. So isn't that odd?
Nick Williams has some power. He hit 17 home runs 3 years ago. I think that's what I heard on the broadcast.
Okay, I think I heard the same thing. But, like, okay, I'll repeat the question then. Isn't that odd? Okay. You've got Yasmani Grandal, who is your highest-paid player. I think I need to check the salary numbers again, but I think a guy who is considered dangerous at the plate, a guy with some pop more recently than maybe Nick Williams, very surprising decision not to use him in that situation. Can we agree on a term to describe that? Curious? Is that going far enough? Probably not, but it was at least eyebrow-raising, right?
David, they lost that game three times, okay? So it's really hard. I mean, yeah, okay, whatever. I don't understand. I mean, I didn't understand anything that happened in that game. I didn't understand how Aaron Bummer could give up a run after he's the guy that said that once all they got to do is get to the sixth inning. You know, it was great that they came back then with the two-run homer, but as you said, Liam Hendricks going for his first save on the south side. Gives up a home run, so the game is tied. And then, you know, Garrett Crochet is in the 10th inning with a man on second. That is a high-pressure situation, and he is not an experienced player. He's got unbelievable stuff, but he didn't seem like he had unbelievable stuff in that moment. And he made a fielding error, and it wasn't really the error of fielding. It was the throw after he fielded. He tried to bounce one. I don't know what the hell he was trying to do, to be honest with you. He hurried his throw, and as a result, the winning run ended up scoring. And it was just you were just kind of beside yourself as you watched the whole thing. So, yeah, they could have taken the back out of a guy's hands who would not even be on the team were it not for injury. Promoted because they have injury. But I was so frustrated by that point at everything that had happened beforehand that I was second guessing a lot of different moves. Sure, add that to the list, but
okay.
I don't think I was going out of my head over that. I was just frustrated by the whole thing.
Well, you hate to go down without giving your best shot, and if one of your better hitters is on the bench and he's not injured in a situation that you really could have used him and you needed that kind of potential long ball. Yeah, that was as curious as any move that was or wasn't made yesterday by Tony La Russa. And, some of the pitching decisions you wonder, but it's just a matter of execution, I think, more than choice when it comes to those things. But it's just a frustrating day all around for the Sox, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not picking on Tony La Russa, you know, leaving Matt Foster in, that's a ways ago, and I'm not picking that one apart. You used the right people in the right spot. They just didn't deliver. And I don't know why I was so frustrated by the bummer thing, and then they overcome it, and I'm like, oh, you know, finally, they've won this game, and then, you know, here comes the South Slida, and that's frustrating. So, I don't know. We could pick nit all day about it, but they lost that game a few different times in a few different ways, let's put it that way. And they should have won that game. They how many times did they walk in that game? My God, they had guys on base the entire day. And they weren't knocking in runs, so that's what it comes down to.
One for 15 in runners in scoring position. So
last I checked, that's not as good as you'd hope, is it? No. Score has learned. The Masters goes to Hideki Matsuyama. He shot 10 under and is the first player from Japan to win a major. He won by a stroke, but it wasn't that close. He missed a point blank putt and then knocked it in to seal the win. It was Zatoris who was one back, and he had a meltdown at one point. Scheffler had a terrible meltdown at one point. It was just, I didn't feel like it was the most glorious Sunday I've ever watched, the Masters, but it was the Masters, and congratulations to Hideki Matsuyama. He is the first Japanese-born player to win the Masters, and to he's a national hero, as they pointed out several times. He'll be really well received when he goes home, and congratulations to him. Always a fun story.
He's no Ohtani, but he will be welcomed back in Japan with open arms.
All right, we got to get to the 5 at 5. I promise to be more upbeat. It's just it took a lot out of me yesterday, David, watching game after game.
All right,
after
we're going to rally. We're going to rally.
We're going to rally.
We're going to get it together. Happy.
Yeah.
And by the end of this show, you are going to be projecting big things for the White Sox once again.
Yes.
Maybe.
I'm trying hard to feel good about everything, but yesterday was a struggle, let's be honest about it. The weekend was a bit of a struggle for our baseball teams. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Were you as appalled by the Wilson Contreras call at second base as he and the Cubs seemed to be? Was it an obvious interference, a judgment call, or in retrospect, an obvious out? Was it a turning point in the game and the series?
Yeah, I think it was portrayed as a turning point in the game and maybe then in the series by the Cubs. I didn't understand that, frankly. You know, I thought it was like a big moment, because you see the ball come flying by first base, and it's like, wow, you know, here comes Anthony Rizzo to second, and all of a sudden they stop and look at it. And, you know, the argument that he didn't make contact doesn't take away from the fact that he went out and broke up the double play by throwing himself at the guy's legs, and the guy had to jump and made a bad throw as a result of that. So I think that in the old days that was perfectly legal and you'd have no problem with it, but the rules have changed and they're trying to protect players and they don't want that happening at second base. So you're no longer allowed to make that play. And I understand that in the heat of the moment, you know, you're trained to make that play when you're a kid and when you're coming up in baseball, but they've changed the rule. And I think that it was a fairly obvious out when they went back and looked at it. And they showed it again. It was like, oh, yeah, he's kind of out of the base path, and he's diving at the guy while trying to throw a hand at the base. So I felt it was an obvious out when all was said and done. I also think it's weird that that's the big turning point, and that's – you know, they lost that game pretty handily after losing the game the day before pretty badly. So I am – struggling to understand how that would have, well, that rally was about to start and we would have scored 7 runs there. I didn't see that. So I can't call it a turning point in the game. I thought it was a significant moment, but I thought it was an out.
All right, there are two things that are true about this. And the first one is that, okay, it's rule 6.01 in the MLB official rule book, and it states that a runner must make a bona fide slide on double play attempts. And the judgment from the umpire was that Wilson Contreras didn't do that. That's a judgment call. It was a terrible call. Terrible call. And it reflects the Charmin-like softness that this, you know, has become in baseball, where, you know, you got a guy who might be going out of the base paths a little bit to knock over the middle infielder. You got to protect those guys like quarterbacks in the NFL. Give me a break. That was not a hard – it was a hard slide in terms of he's going hard and he's trying to do whatever he can to break up the double play. But that wasn't a dirty play. It wasn't really beyond the bounds of anything that you're trying to eliminate in baseball. You want guys going hard. You don't want guys being like, you know, I'm going to cut off my path to second base because I might not be a bona fide slide. I thought it was a terrible call. Now, so
that is their rule, and you know, you mentioned the rule. Read the rule. He did exactly the throw wouldn't have been off because the guy had to jump while he was throwing. I mean, I'm just saying. We can argue the value of whether or not that should be the rule, but that is their rule.
The runner also states that the rule also states the runner must be able in attempt to reach the base with his hand or foot, and he still could do that. So it's a rule, but is also open for interpretation. And I'm just saying that the judgment or the interpretation here, if he doesn't call anything, I'm not sure that you would have much to quibble about if you're the Pirates either. So it's one of those things that is a judgment call, even though you could interpret the rule in two different ways. If it gives you, he's away from the base and these the applicable part of the rule. At the same time, I mean, you know, it wasn't so, like he was so far out that he couldn't touch the base had he extended his hand. So I thought it could have gone either way. But, you know, they did what they did. So that was, I felt like, you know, my opinion was it was a bad call. So that's number one. The other thing is that, though, as bad of it as it might have been for the Cubs, it's ridiculous to think that changed the game. Or boy, you know, that we could not recover from that, because here we are in the third inning. It's the third inning. It's 3-1. You're playing the Pirates, so it's not 3-2. You went 2-for-20 the rest of the game. Did it affect every at bat after that? Give me a break. So I didn't like the call. But I probably didn't like the response worse than I didn't like the call, because it just was, are these guys that fragile where this one call that went against them was in their heads the rest of the game and they couldn't recover from that psychological setback? I mean, come on.
Lots of gray area. That's why the play ended up going to New York. If it was crystal clear, then the call should have been made right there in Pittsburgh. They wouldn't have needed to go back to New York if it was crystal clear. He was able to reach out with his arm. He did slide on his hip rear end. He didn't roll the guy. I mean, I did think Marquis, tip of the cap to Marquis, did a really nice job showing some unbelievable old mid-80s, late 70s clips of just guys. We would be happy if Bears linebackers and safeties took on a running back the way these guys took out shortstops, okay? I mean, there was some contact that we would jump up and down about as Bears fans. That's how much contact was being made, and that is ridiculous, and they had to get rid of that. I get that. And later on, we're going to hear some great audio from Ron Coomer, who had strong opinions on all of this. But to answer the question about, this all started in Chicago when Contreras first started getting hit, right? The Pirates have to do things unconventionally to win games. So they're doing things to needle, to get under your skin. I mean, Wilson carried the bat all the way down basically to first base until the husky Pirate bat boy said, excuse me, Mr. Contreras, could I take the bat back for you, please? I thank God that Wilson didn't shove the kid with the bat, or he wouldn't be playing for quite a long time. But I think they've gotten in their heads. And I think this is like a bigger issue, but part of why I thought David Ross was going to make sense as the manager of the Cubs is because he could get through to these guys. he could get inside their heads because he had been inside their heads. He had had intimate conversations with them. And that's not going on right now. This is a problem. There's too much me, and not team going on with these Cubs right now. And when Wilson Javi Baez struck out swinging at balls at his eyeballs, that's when I said, that's it. In the group text, I said, that's it. I'm going to the Masters. I'm done.
Are you saying that that play then did? So you're saying the hit batsman is what changed the game, not the play.
Well, I think it was Wilson's body. It was Wilson's body language. And then I think what happens, Mully, is that that was a way for Wilson Contreras to retaliate against being it in the situation he was in. He had the opportunity to go in hard second, and then Major League Baseball steps in and says, no. And I think it just deflated. I think it just deflated the group. Now they got to be stronger than that. To David's point, it's only the third inning, just not. And that's
a
problem, right? I agree, David. That's where I think Ross needs to be a better leader. That's David Ross's job here.
Great question.
How should David Ross adjust to the hitting woes in terms of lineup changes or batting order tweaks? Are you beginning to wonder whether these are chronic issues that will require more than just a change or a tweak?
Well, it is David Ross's job to figure that out. I don't know that this is something that can be fixed with just tweaking the lineup, even though I would probably tweak the lineup immediately. Because right now, I thought we agreed they were going to get 11 hits per game, and they started it out well in Pittsburgh, and then they get the day off, and they come back, and on Saturday, I think that they had 8 hits, and yesterday they had 5. They're going the wrong direction. That's 13. They were 13 for 65 over the weekend. That's 200. That's not good enough. And so now here they are, 167 as a team. If you don't change something, aren't you just being stubborn or just being unresponsive? You don't want to overreact. And he might get salty at being asked about by Bruce or whoever about the fact that there's a lot of people wondering or maybe overreacting to the Cubs' futility. But it's not like it's just 9 games. This is the same lineup that has underperformed for several years now. And I don't know if the answer or the solutions are on the roster. So I think that if you're Jed Hoyer, you're watching this very carefully and very closely, and you're wondering about how much longer, can you wait? Is your timetable change just because you were maybe worse offensively than you feared? And now you find out here we are mid-April, and the trend is not a good one, and it's a continuation of a bad thing over the last couple seasons. I don't know if you can make a deal yet. I don't know when you make a deal. Are you more likely to make one earlier? It's frustrating. And until you buy yourself some time, I think as you do that, you got to change the lineup, because expecting different results from the same approach, I think, is not a wise thing. So I would hope the changes begin with a tweak to the lineup. Maybe you lead off somebody like Rizzo. Maybe you move some people around. I don't know if that's the answer, but I don't know that standing pat and expecting different results is either.
Anthony Rizzo is the single greatest leadoff hitter in the history of the game, and I would definitely try that tweak immediately. Yeah, and I'm joking because it's a joke, but it's also he's very effective as a leadoff guy, and I think that they got to get something going. They just have to get something going in their lineup. So I would do something like that. But guys, to coin a phrase, they've been snake bitten since 2018 at the very earliest. It could be snake bitten for longer than that. So therefore, I think that this is a chronic issue, and we've talked about this quite a few times. And I don't know that the solution is in front of them, because I think that were it in front of them, they would have had a different approach to it. And I don't think there's an obvious solution. But something is rotten in the state of the Cubs' batting order, and they need to do more than just tweak. They probably need to make some kind of change here. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you try to shock the lineup by sitting somebody, or will that look like you're taking someone on kind of thing. You're blaming somebody, but something has to give here. And I think that it might be more than a tweak, but something has to happen next time out And I would start with Rizzo leading off just to see if that can jumpstart anything.
I do like the idea of Rizzo being the leadoff hitter tonight. I like that. I think I would like Chris Bryant even moving up another spot to number two. Here's the first thing I would do, though. So Duffy would start tonight at third base. Bryant would go out to right field. Sogard would be at second base. And I'm sorry, David, but Mr. Bodey and Mr. Hayward are going to grab some bench for a night. I don't care about the righty. I don't care who's pitching for the Brewers tonight. I don't care what the big blue computer says. That's what I'm doing tonight. Duffy's playing third base. Bryant's moving to the outfield. And listen, I could, if you want to sit Jock instead of Hayward, I guess I could live with that. That if it's a righty lefty thing, fine. But Bodie takes a seat. Sogard gets in there. Duffy gets in there. Guys that will take a professional approach to the plate. You got to leave Baez in there. See, here's the problem with what's going on. Baez can't really be, you can't sit him down. You can't sit Baez down for Sogard right now because Baez still plays a tremendous defense. And because they decided to put somebody at the alternate site clock doesn't get running, you can't even sit that guy down. And you can't do it now. That would be an overreaction and just stupidity. If you brought Nico Hoerner back now, that would just be dumb because you've made a baseball decision. So now you got to gulp, swallow it, and deal with it. So that can't happen. So Baez has to stay in the lineup until, God forbid, he's hurt. But you can put Duffy at third base. You can move Bryant to the outfield, and you can put Sogard at second. That's what I'm doing if I'm David Ross tonight.
So you're sticking with the Nico decision based on pride more than service time, right, at this point. You don't want to swallow your pride. Call a guy up who might give you a spark.
I don't think they can.
Have a backup shortstop.
We would kill them if they did that. I won't say we. I would kill them verbally if they did that. That now that doesn't make any. I mean, you're 4-5. You're not 1-6 or something. I mean, the season's not over yet, but it's on tilt. You can't do that. You made a decision. Now you got to live with it.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
Was it disappointing to see the White Sox lose in extra innings and with it lose their winning streak against left-handed starters? How do you explain the Sox looking like world beaters until stranding 1,000 runners and wasting 1,000 walks?
Was it 1,000?
It seemed like it. It's really in the box score. Like
it's 1,000.
It seemed like they should have had more runs. Who was it? I think it was Yermin Mercedes walked at least three times, right? He and Andrew Vaughn walked twice to open an inning. So you got guys, or was that late? They had guys on base all over the place, and they couldn't knock in any runs. And now we're sitting here, and we're going to pick apart the bullpen, wisely so, and you know, we really ought to. But the fact of the matter is the timely hitting comes into play here, right? You just can't have that many ridiculous hits that leave people you can't leave that many runners on base, I'm trying to say. It just drove me out of my mind. It felt like they were up by about 10 runs, and the fact is they had a one-run lead, and that was rough. They had only scored a run despite all that. Then they got another two-run homer, and that's pretty much where it stopped. And when you get that many guys on base, you just need to have the right guy come up at the right time and get a hit. That's it. You know, move the line. I got to tell you, if you learned anything watching Pittsburgh, they didn't batter you. They didn't really beat you. They just moved the line. They just kept moving guys around and scoring runs. And it made you wonder if the Sox are incapable of that, if they are one of these teams that needs the big hit, and if you don't get the big hit, you can't just move the line. Why is that funny? I'm dead serious.
No, I know you're dead serious. I'm only chuckling because 9 games in, the Sox have pirate envy.
I don't mean it that way. I just, some games you win by thumping the ball. Some games you got to be able to create a run. And when you get guys on base and you have that many guys running around bases, you would think some of them have to cross the plate. So it was just beyond frustrating, and they really should have scored a lot more.
I just think it underscores how everything seems worse than it is when your bullpen can't protect a lead. and all the optimism and faith and belief that you had in the White Sox in spring training in the offseason that I think you'll get again. I don't think this is going to be a long-term thing with the bullpen blowing leads, but all of it was sort of predicated on the one thing that you believed in more than anything. And how many times did we repeat ourselves over the offseason? Well, the strength of this team is its bullpen. The strength of the Sox are in its relief corps. And then when they started talking, they were reinforcing that themselves. But when you blow leads, everything else seems a little bit more, every issue seems more magnified and every problem seems worse. And so when you blow a lead like Liam Hendricks did, the focus isn't on, boy, he gets a save. Boy, they salvage, a tough day. Boy, Adam Eaton was clutch, wasn't he? Did you see the way he celebrated rounding the bases? And then it becomes like, oh, my gosh, they were 1-for-15 with runners in scoring position. How in the world are they going to produce and manufacture any runs this year? I get it. I mean, I think it's everything. It's all a problem, as Foxy might say. But I think when you look at, why we're focusing on some of the negatives, it's because when you can't protect the lead and guys who you have come to trust, and you have to trust, if this team is going to be a legit World Series contender, Aaron Bummer, Liam Hendricks, even Matt Foster, these guys have got to be better than they have been and more consistent and predictable. When that happens, these other problems will seem less major. But right now, yeah, I mean, it's like, what are you doing up there? You've got to be more clutch with runners in scoring position, and you've got to pick everyone else up.
The Sox quickly became the most interesting thing in sports locally yesterday. Quickly, the Masters was done basically. The Cubs just stink out loud right now, and the fact, I get that the bullpen was supposed to be dominant and predicted to be the best in baseball, but you're not going to win a lot of games when you only score those runs. You don't win many games when you leave all those guys on base. I mean, something's got to give with that. I mean, clutch hitting, it's almost like they've got Cubs stink on them, meaning the White Sox. Like, they're doing the same thing the Cubs are, except the Cubs can't even leave that many men on base. I mean, that's what's frustrating. And then, Mully, they scored, what, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. Right, that's when the Royals got runs in the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th, and that's what did them in. That's what did them in, and these are series that, I know it wasn't really a series because they only ended up playing the game on Sunday, but geez, you really wanted to do better against the Royals, and you wanted to do better against the Pirates, so it's disappointing for both sides of town, but if I was a Sox fan, I'd be more upset with the offense at this moment than I would be with the bullpen, because you don't win a lot of games scoring the really? Amount of runs they've been scoring.
Really?
I just do you win a lot of games scoring that few runs? I mean, it's not enough.
You were in position to win those games, and your bullpen stunk.
But you were in a position to score like 5 times the amount of runs you scored.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been a very crooked number.
You're both making the same point. Here's the thing. If you score more runs, then the bullpen takes pressure off the bullpen. But the bullpen's got to be able to win a game like that. I just think that the problem was the bullpen melts down and they had no help. So you didn't put yourself in a position to win to start it by not scoring it with all those opportunities. And I guess that's what clutch is, right? There's no such thing as clutch. It's just whether or not you get opportunities. Well, they had opportunities all over the lineup, and they weren't knocking in runs. So then eventually that bites you because the great bullpen, again, 3 different guys giving up a run in the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. That's tough.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
That's not the manager. That's not the manager. That's not a guy making a bad decision. You put the right guys in the right position, and they didn't get the job done. Okay, I'm going to get better.
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
The Bulls had 2 really bad losses over the weekend. Did we buy in too soon?
I think that of the 2 losses over the weekend, Friday was bad. You wasted a 50-point effort, a 50-point effort by Zach LaVine, and that was a tremendous, tremendous individual performance. And if you were watching and saw him score 25 points in a row, it's like unlike anything you have seen since Jordan. This was unbelievable, the zone he was in, and they wasted it. So you felt bad about that, but that bad loss became worse on Sunday night when you lost to the worst team in the NBA in Minnesota. I don't care where the game was. I don't care how emotional Towns was, and he was, you know, up for this game. That was a terrible defeat, and it was bad on a couple different levels. Not to mention you need it, and maybe it didn't hurt you in the standings because somebody lost and you're still in 10th place and all of these things that you could justify. But they made the trade and they made the move to avoid these kind of situations. And still they are so vulnerable defensively, too easy to score on. They're not physical enough. Billy Donovan touched on that a little bit after the game. But you can't let these things happen. And you're playing the Timberwolves. You need to take care of business professionally. And you can't let a team score 121 points against you as easily as the Timberwolves did. So they made it interesting down the stretch. They had good balance in their scoring. And Zach almost pulled it out at the end. But it was not something that you can tolerate. And it's another sign of a team that you believe in, but not fully. It's hard to buy in fully until the Bulls learn how to have a defensive identity. Their offense is great to watch at times, and they have all these different options now. And, you know, we talk about Lowry adjusting to life off the bench and Patrick Williams, how does he fit in, and all of these things, and we talk in terms of offensively. But you know what? Got to stop people, and that's when they're going to take that next step. They're not stopping anybody, and that was in the team photo for worst losses of the season last night.
You know, it's interesting, David. Are you saying that they would have won last night had they won the night before? On Friday night, would they have won the Sunday game as a result almost? Because I believe that. I honest to God believe that they had that Friday game won, and then they just stopped playing at the end of the game. Their offense came to a screeching halt. I was watching that game and marveling at Zach LaVine, and then he hit like a really nice layup at one point. I think that was 48. And then they were up like 5 points. Was there 7 minutes left? And then it just stopped. And you're watching the last 5 minutes of the game. They're just getting beaten pretty badly, and you're just kind of like, how did that happen? And I get it. You know, Trae Young started knocking out shots too. He ended up with 42 points. He had a good game. But Zach scored 50. I thought it was pretty funny when he talked about Jordan being, you know, a ghost. I like that comment. A myth? I don't think it's a myth. I think it actually happened. I think
no myth.
A lot of saw it. Not a myth. But, my God, he had 38 50-point games in his career. And no one from the Bulls has had more than two since. And Zach just got number one. That's unbelievable when you really stop and think about that. So that was kind of a fun thing to contemplate, other than the fact they lost the bloody game. How do you lose that game? They just literally came to a screeching halt. Minnesota's won a couple games now, and they had another big win the other night, but you know that you're going to get their best. You know, it was an emotional thing for Towns, his mom. They had a tribute to his mother who passed away, and his dad was in the building. He hit a three-pointer at the end of that game where you just – it's like the kind of shot you want him to take, but he knocks it down. And that was a real problem because they were out of time. But I really do believe if they had won on Friday, they'd have won on Sunday. And unfortunately, I don't know how they lost, frankly, on Friday. They stopped competing at the end of that game for whatever reason. And guess what? I forget the final score, but it wasn't close. It was like they just got – it was like a late-breaking blowout. Here, there's 3 minutes left. We're going to knock the hell out of you. What are you going to do? Well, we'll stand here, jaw agape, and wonder what happened. And as far as the buy-in is concerned, listen, that's a terrible loss, and that's a hard buy-in.
Yeah, the Minnesota A-Rods definitely got the best of the Bulls last night. And I thought, after such a brutal loss on Friday, and I can't agree with you guys more about how bad that was, considering the effort that Zach put out, that was the perfect team for them to be facing on Sunday night. Sleepy Minnesota, Sunday night, get right, head down to Memphis today. This is how you're going to feel good. You're going to get in the right direction. And again, they were down, you guys said in the first segment, immediately, it was like it was 10-0. Like, let's start the game, Minnesota 10, Bulls nothing, and now we'll start. Like, they were down 10 the whole time. It was awful. It was absolutely, it was awful. And it just Mully, I think you said it. It was the cherry on top of a bad sports weekend for our town. And the Bears didn't even play.
There's no intrinsic value to this question.
The old adage is that the Masters doesn't really begin until the back nine starts on Sunday. Was it over by then this year? Were you expecting a choke at that point?
Well, it would have taken a choke at that point. You know, by the time you got to the back nine, it would have taken a choke for him to lose that tournament. Now, having said that, I think that there were some chokes. I think he had a rough stretch. I think there were a lot of rough stretch. Nobody made a run at the guy. And it wasn't a great Masters. There wasn't a great energy out of the Masters. I'm sorry, but it wasn't one of these tournaments where people are like texting each other, you got to get to a TV. This is unbelievable what's happening. Oh, finally the move is being made. There wasn't even like the big meltdown. It was just sort of a, okay, here's the tournament. Oh, look who's at. He's taking the lead. Oh, Rose is behind. Oh, and he's not going. Okay, the tournament's over. I mean, even right down to winning the tournament, you miss a putt that is like, oh, that's okay. He just tapped it in. I mean, it was like playing golf with people. I thought he should have, you know, even on that last putt. I mean, I know that was just a knock it in, but good God, put both your feet in front of it and knock it in. It's for the Masters title, and he didn't even have to do that. So, I thought it was a bit of a downer of a golf tournament. It made me wonder about post-Tiger, about the future of the sport, about all the little things that are surrounding golf. And it didn't – I know I'm supposed to jump on board with this idea that, you know, they've taken golf and they're bringing it all over the world. And now, you know, here is a Japanese player that has won the tournament, and we're going to see someone from South America or Central America or wherever they have – made their impact next, that's going to come in and win the tournament. That was kind of the idea, what they were selling. I just didn't feel like there was a great buzz around this tournament. And usually I will get a lot of texts from people if something big is going on with that tournament. And, you know, I was going over and checking, and the scores weren't really changing, so I was staying with some baseball.
Yeah, that's the only reason I was glad about the White Sox blowing the lead. It meant I didn't have to turn on the Masters yet. So it was dull. I mean, it was boring, and you don't want to acknowledge it or admit it, but it just was. It was different. You know, he started the day with a 4-shot lead. He protected it, but that was the least dramatic 1-shot victory ever, I think, at Augusta, when you look at what happened and how it happened. And yeah, I watched the last few holes just out of obligation or duty. But I found myself, after watching the last few holes out of obligation or duty, wishing that Tony Romo was sitting next to Jim Nance just to spice things up a little bit. That was Snoozeville.
I would wish Tony was out there on the course. Maybe that might have made it more interesting, right? He fancies himself as a pro golfer. The best day was probably Thursday of the whole event, when Rose went out and kind of got that early lead. He had the weather, you know, people were raving. There was a weather delay on Saturday. And what did they do during that 90 minutes? Oh, they put on Tiger Woods. Last time they played the traditional time of the year I will bet that was the highest rated time CBS got for this event. I think the ratings are going to probably be an all-time low. That leaderboard was atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious, and we don't have enough time for me to get into it, but it was really bad. And I don't think anybody's saying, oh boy, I can't wait to tune in 2 weeks from now, because I'm assuming Hideki won't be playing on the PGA Tour the next week or two. But the next time he plays in America, I don't think we're going to be glued to the TV to see how's this Master champion going to respond to winning the Masters. I don't think that's what you're going to get down on the couch for. So really just really disappointing. It's a great event. It's supposed to be the sports Super Bowl in my mind, and it was a letdown.
All right, 312-644-6767. The Wilson Contreras play, was that the turning point in humankind? Do you think that changed the course of all our lives? 312-644-6767. What does David Ross do now? How do you get that group fired up? And how disappointing was it to see the Sox and the way that they played that game and the way the bullpen broke down? do the White Sox have as much a bullpen problem as the Cubs have a hitting problem? What about the Bulls? Are you on board in any way? Are you worried now that they're not even going to be 10th and make the play-in? And how fired up were you about the Masters? Was that a good tournament for you? 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw on the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.